Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf.
Hey, today's a kind of a crazy day. I think it's day like 37 of the quarantine. So we're all, going a little stir crazy and starting to get on each other's nerves. It's when you start realizing that, you know, you have a great dog or you have a dog that could be greater. And a lot of it is also, you know, let's face it, we're all mad at each other. I've seen people who are claiming they're going to get a divorce when this is all over. There's old phrase, familiarity breeds contempt. No, it's not. And I always say that contempt, it breeds contempt. It makes you more upset. It makes you more angry. It gives you a feeling that, you know, almost that you're like resenting. And I think what's happening now, a lot of people are kind of resenting each other. They're feeling that, that somebody's not doing what they're supposed to do. And that's where you start having problems. You know, let's face it, it's not easy, you know, going through life. We never promised you a rose garden. God never promised us an easy life. And if we're able to have some, you know, a nice time, a nice, easy time, you know, it's a blessing. You know, we're very, very fortunate if we're allowed to experience that. So, you know, I think where a lot of people are starting to have problems with dogs is actually them having problems with their mates, with their roommates, their significant other, their kids, whatever, because the kids are supposed to be taking care of the dog, right? Or the husband is supposed to be taking care of the dog. Somebody's supposed to be taking care of the dog. And, it should be a really wonderful blessing for everybody where people are enjoying their dogs and they're enjoying their homes and all. But there are a lot of people in inner cities who have really, really small apartments, and they're having an issue with what to do with the dog. And I think today would be a great day, no better time than the present. It'd be a really great day for us to talk about some things that you can do at home to help yourself and to help your dog. One of the really cool things that you can do is start teaching some tricks to your dog. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Start thinking of things that you might like to do. What are the things that you enjoy? The olden days, I remember I trained my Scottish Terrier Charcoal to get my father's slippers. And, my father would come home and the dog would bring him his slippers. And good luck if you have a Scotty. Scotty's terriers don't always think it's a good idea unless they think it's their idea. But things like that can really not only kind of be a fun thing for you, but they can also be things to break the ice and to make life a little bit more fun. So think about, you know, while you're stuck at home and, you know, in this crazy quarantine, and they say now the curve is flattening, so everybody's excited and like, wow, we're going to be able to go out. Remember, just because you're allowed to go out doesn't mean you should go out. And if you're trying to do something and trying to be constructive using your time, you know, I tell people, I have clients who haven't read my book, and you know, I said it took me 2 weeks to read to write my book, and it's taking you a year to just read it. So you can get a copy of your favorite book. Doesn't have to be mine, but get a copy of a book and start a Harry Potter if you want, or start something that you have been wanting to do. Don't look at this as a bad time. Look at it as kind of a forced vacation. I look at it for myself as, you know, we're all stopping and we're all in it together. That's what's kind of different about what's happening to us now versus any other thing that we've had in our lifetimes. You know, you look at, you know, people say, oh, how terrible it is to being stuck at home. Well, I mean, you know, you had people during World War I, World War II, bomb shelters and, air raids and things like that, and the air raid warden. I mean, this was like a life and death. This was a scary time. You couldn't have lights on. You had to be sequestered in your home so that if planes flew over, they wouldn't see the lights. You think about the Holocaust. You think about the genocide in Africa, you think about like these terrible things. I mean, at least where most of us have homes, most of us have food, it might not be what we want, might not be what we felt like getting from takeout that day, but we have food. And if we don't have enough food, we can get it from somewhere, right? We're healthy, those of us who don't have the coronavirus and those of us who are not immune compromised or have some other disease, because other diseases are not on hiatus, you know? Other diseases still happen. Kids are still getting diagnosed with cancer in the midst of this whole thing. So we really have to take stock and look at it and say, gosh, you know, it stinks, but, you know, I'm going to make the best of it. So, you know, you can always read my book, which is a really quick read. That's not going to take you very long, only a few hours. But you could read the book. It's called Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101. And you can get it on Amazon. And obviously, I'm the author, so you know my name. So you can look it up that way. And it's like less than $10. What's great about it, though, is it's set up into chapters of like how you can do things. So you could actually read just like a chapter a day and then practice the things that are in each chapter. You'll see that it's really very easy to have a really great dog. And if your dog has behavioral issues, why not work on them now? Don't wait till you go back to work because you're saying, oh, I'm worried about, well, worrying never changes anything. Worry is not a good thing, because worry prevents you from doing what you should do. Caution is okay. It's good to be cautious and not do things, but overcautious is very boring, and overcautious is somebody who's never going to explore all the amazing opportunities. So let's all say for this week, until I talk to you next week, let's all go out there and let's do something great that we never thought we would want to do. Try something you haven't done. For instance, your home, you know, get a little race car set for your kids or even for yourself. Set up a train, you know, trains are so cool. Set up something you like. Learn how to garden. Go get, and you can order all this stuff online, go get some bags of soil and some seeds and plant things. Teach your kids how to plant things. Teach them where stuff comes from that doesn't come from the produce section, that there's a farmer. Farmers are out there working. I'm pretty sure that the farmers are still out there farming, because otherwise we wouldn't have food. So, you know, show your kids and even yourself, how many of you have ever started seeds? How many of you have ever really tried, when we have like this, the vernal equinox, things like that, why don't we, you know, stand an egg on its end, you know, on the wrong end, so to speak. Why don't we do things that we wanted to do, but we just didn't have time for? And remember, about 90% of us are still working. We're just working from home. But instead of having your home start feeling like a prison, you can do things in your home. Set up a section, even if you have a really small apartment, set up a section that is like your Nirvana Zen area. Maybe take up yoga. There's Zoom yoga classes now. There's all kinds of really amazing opportunities that you can take. You just have to be open-minded and you just have to look. So find something you've always wanted to do. Maybe you wanted to write a book. I know people who've told me for 20 years, oh, I wish I could write a book. Well, write a book. It doesn't matter if anybody buys it. It doesn't matter if you sell one copy or a million copies. If you enjoy it and it's something that gives you pleasure, and maybe it's something, maybe it's writing about the coronavirus. I've actually got a book I'm working on right now that is inspired by this. And, you know, it's not about feeling sorry for ourselves. We are living in the country that everybody else wants to get into. We are so, so lucky. What we have to worry about is there are a lot of us who don't have food. There are a lot of us who are stuck, who families who, you know, lost jobs and they're lower paying jobs. And these, you know, both of the family members, both the mom and dad, aren't working, or somebody had, an opportunity lost that they lost a job, or that they lost an opportunity to do something to bring in some extra money. And yet I see people buying, shopping online. Amazon's going crazy. Jeff Bezos is making money hand over fist. A brilliant idea. There are a lot of companies that are doing splendidly. The supermarket chains are all doing so well because we're all stocking up and doing things that we normally wouldn't have done. So look, even the stock market is back up over 25,000, which I can't honestly tell you I'm happy about, but it's that life is kind of in a weird way starting to go back to normal. And in 6 months from now, or a year from now, or 2 years from now, I bet a lot of you are going to say, wow, you know, even though we were, you know, bickering, or even though my kids were driving me nuts, I really enjoyed having that 2 months with my family that I was at home, or that 3 months that I wasn't at work. And I think we're going to all look back on it as a time that we got to spend extra time with our families. We got to spend extra time with our kids, and we got to spend extra time with our dogs. So that brings me to the next issue, dogs. So think about how many of you didn't realize how dysfunctional your dog was or how good your dog was. I've had so many emails and text messages from clients, from patients, owners, from listeners, from people just on the internet asking me, how do you cope with a dog who's shut in? Because, of course, now so many people are not really going for long walks. Now, you've got a totally different subculture in the suburbs of any town or a city, because in the cities, that's where we got to be extra careful. Because in the city, think about, you know, people are really living literally on top of each other. So they have much higher chance, unfortunately, higher risk of contracting coronavirus. But the other part of that is they also have a unique opportunity because they can use their opportunity in their apartments. They can use that extra room that they were using for storage. They can use that little nook behind the kitchen and make that into a training section. Do something with your dog. And if your wee-wee pad trained your dog, you can still put the dog out. You can still do the hunt, wait, eat we talk about. You can still take the dog for a walk inside your house. You don't have to leave the house. But if you are going to go and you have a larger dog and you're taking your dog out, there are things that obviously you can do, but you don't have to spend as much time walking as, you know, as you might want to because of this whole thing going on. What you can do is start your walk inside your house. Think about how many people pick up the leash and the dog starts going ballistic, jumping all over, carrying on, just crazy. And the dog just is jumping up and you're screaming, shut up, get down, knock it off. And you start yelling at your dog. Well, chances are, we can fix that today. Chances are that you are creating that or somebody has created that situation. So let's talk about that. You get ready to take your dog out for a walk and your dog is going nuts. Well, why is your dog going nuts? How many times do I hear, oh, you want to go for a walk? You want to go for a walk? Come on. Oh, you want to go for a walk? Come on. Yeah, we're going to go see a friend. You want to go for a walk? And you start it. You sound like a darn cat cartoon character. Don't start that way. Make sure that you instead start calmly. Pick up the leash, put it down on the table, walk away. Have your significant other do the same. Pick up the leash, put it somewhere else, walk away. Pick it up, put it somewhere else, walk away. Put it back into the drawer or back onto the hook on the wall. Put it back, take it off, put it back, take it off, and don't look at your dog. Don't talk to your dog. Don't touch your dog. Just ignore your dog. And pretty soon, your dog is going to start associating the leash with, I don't know if we're going out. I don't know if they're doing this weird human interaction where they're just bonding over a leash. I don't know, but I'm just going to lay here. And guess what? In minutes, you can fix that problem. Because those of you who've had problems and who have written in or called in and you say, oh, Janice, you know, I have this terrible problem. My dog gets so excited on walks. He's jumping up at everybody. And almost every single time, guess what started it? Oh, you want to go for a walk, Fluffy? You're going to go see all your friends. Just get some duct tape your mouth shut, and go get the leash, put it on the dog, walk outside like you're going to, you know, go pick up the newspaper at the corner store, and just ignore the dog. And then when you'll start seeing that the dog is going to kind of lessen in intensity, and eventually your walks will be more pleasurable. Your walks won't be hellish because you're not getting the dog all amped up before you even head out. Now, in my book, you're going to see a section, a whole chapter on rules and respect. And that's important because we're going to go over that a little bit. It's important for you to be able to understand that when you have rules and you set these rules, it doesn't make you a bad guy. It doesn't make you, oh, mom, you're mean. You're being so mean to the dog. It's not. It's a consistency. Listen, we all had a whole ton of rules foisted on us, and there's certainly some people who aren't listening, but most people are heeding those rules. Rules teach you respect. Rules keep people safe. And it doesn't mean that we have to like them. It doesn't mean that they're fair. But for right now, to save lives, we have to be able to look at life and look at things and say, aha, this is for everyone's good. This isn't about me. This isn't about people hating each other. This isn't about people trying to do things that are, you know, unjust or unjust or full of hatred or vitriol. It's just what we're doing now to try to keep people safe. And I know a lot of people who've had coronavirus, and unfortunately, two of my friends lost a parent and one lost a grandparent because of the COVID epidemic. And the problem is that the people who didn't follow the rules are the ones who caused those two people to contract the virus and pass away. So rules are important. And rules don't mean that they're bad. Rules don't mean that they're good. It just means that it's a set of guidelines that we have that we need to keep us safe and healthy and happy. All right? We don't have to all be happy, but if people aren't dying, I sure would be very, very happy. So let's talk about that for a minute. So how can we set those same boundaries and guidelines for our dogs? Well, a lot of you guys are, like we talked about separation anxiety a few weeks ago, but a lot of you guys are starting to realize that as you're doing the same thing day in, day out, your dogs are repatterning their behavior. The dog that used to be fine all day long by himself, you know, when you're at work, may not be okay when you start returning to work. So you want to start repatterning the behavior to whatever we believe the new norm will be. And that is going to be critical. So I can't wait, and I'm not looking forward to it, but I can't wait to see when everyone starts going back to work, how many calls we're going to get at United Canine Professionals. I'm telling you, I see it already, and I've had clients already calling me and telling me what my patients are doing, that the dogs are getting very clingy, they're getting over-bonded, they're starting to follow people around, they're starting to do things that they used to do that they hadn't done in years, and that's because we have forgotten to set the rules. Rules are not bad. Dogs and children and adults need rules. We need to know what's okay, what's not okay. Just imagine if sometimes when you reached your hand out to shake hands with somebody, sometimes somebody shook your hand. Sometimes somebody yelled at you because you're going to give them coronavirus. And sometimes they just, you know, went ballistic and hit you over the head with a baseball bat. Would you still want to go even attempt to put your hand out to be friendly to someone? Probably not. So make sure that the dogs are not picking up bad behaviors and the wrong behavior. Make sure that your dog knows what to do. And we've got time. How many times do we say, oh, if I only had time? We have the time now. A lot of us really do. So let's start by repatterning the dog's behavior. Let's say, for instance,
You know, your kids are home. They're fighting with each other. You know, they're monopolizing the computer. All the kids are, you know, are at each other's throats. You're having a bad day. Your spouse, you know, is having a bad day. He got called in. She got called out. Whatever. Or you just lost your job, whatever. So that's the kind of unfortunate perfect storm that is what likely happens every time you and your family are not kind of calm and confident and in control. It starts being more the case of what the dog is doing in response to and in reaction to what you guys are creating. So remember energy. Your energy affects your dog's behavior. You're going to read it in the book, and happens, S-H-H-H happens, Dog Behavior 101. You're going to read it in the book, and you're going to make, I mean, everybody winds up nodding their heads like, oh, yeah, I do that. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. I can't believe how easily, it sounds so easy, and, you know, you just communicated it, and it makes sense. But it seems so easy. Why is it so hard? Well, it's hard because we're human and we've got to overthink everything. We've got to overdo everything. And what we're starting to do is stress out our dogs, because at least when we were away at work and the kids were at school, the dog could rest. The dog didn't have to oversee everything. I think dogs are going to be so happy when this quarantine's over. They're going to be like, please, I love you humans, but please go to work. Please go to school. I need some rest. And if you have a dog that particularly is a dominant breed or dominant dog or kind of fearful, that dog may be at this time when everything is starting to be stressful or getting more stressful, that dog may actually end up, instead of being the best dog in the world, that dog may wind up having behavioral issues. And that's what I want to prevent. So we're going to talk about that a little bit now. And we're also going to talk about how your dog acts differently with different people. And we're going to go into that and continue it for the second segment from shelter dog to service dog. So kind of quickly, think about for a moment, think like a dog. Okay, how do dogs think? Dogs think in very black and white terms. It's okay, it's not okay. If it's okay, then it should always be okay. And it can be with permission, like when the dog asks for permission to come up on the furniture. But it's also really important that when it's not okay, it's not okay. I was just with a community foster for Merlin's Kids, for our nonprofit, merlinskids.org, MERLINSKIDS.org. And if you want to donate, please, we always need donations, but especially now, we really need donations. And we would be grateful. But with Merlin's Kids, I had a community foster. It's their first time fostering any dog, and I've been holding their hands, and they're lovely people. But the two girls, especially the one who I'd spent a lot of time teaching, she used to be actually phobic about dogs since she was a baby. She was terrified of dogs, and she's now fostering a dog who's about 27, 28 inches tall at the shoulder, at the withers. The mom is completely thinking in a different way than the kids, and the kids are actually right. They're older teenagers. But you could see the dog in the pictures she sent me. The dog looks just kind of confused, like, I'm not sure what you want of me. And why that's happening is she's being lax with the rules that I taught them, where the kids are being very consistent with those rules. And that's an important thing to remember, that consistency. When you hear some local dog trainer go, oh, you got to be consistent, it doesn't mean that you have to do it every day, 16 times a day at the same exact time. And if that's what they're telling you, then that's wrong. It means that when you work on things or when something comes up, you have to handle it in the same way, same manner, same method, so that the dog can say, oh, if A, then B, if B, then C, instead of saying, oh, if A, then anything from B to Z and 1 to 28,000. That's where your problem is. So we're going to talk about how dogs can act differently depending on the person and even the home situation. We've had dogs, actually two dogs, who were perfectly behaved housebroken and all that, and went to a particular person's home, and all of a sudden had tons of accidents. We were like, what? How are these dogs having accidents? Dogs both went back to where they were originally, no accidents. Went to another foster, no accidents. Went back to the person, same thing, over again, over and over and over. So is it the dog or is it the person? And you guys have to look, because I've had that happen, and I think we all have. And we say, when we go to the shelter, and we say, well, why would anybody get rid of this dog? This dog's like perfect. He's perfect for you, because you listen to this show and you know better. You know how to handle things. But if you aren't by the door when that dog's got to go out, you let the dog roam around. You don't leave the dog, you know, in a bit of a confined area for the first couple of weeks till the dog learns where you want him to go. And if you're upstairs watching TV and the dog is downstairs and has to go to the bathroom, and chances are he might be a little nervous because it sounds like you've got a neurotic household anyway, this other family. So the dog was actually scared and got sick. Can you imagine? That's how toxic that situation was. So if your dog goes somewhere else and the person says, oh my gosh, your dog was terrible. Your dog was jumping and barking and growling and peeing all over the house and acting in a weird way, looked scared, that's not somebody you ever want to entrust with an animal, because those people can be toxic, and they can appear to be nice, but dogs are way better judges of character. And I hear a whole lot of people already. I can see it now. Everybody nodding their head. Yep. Dogs are way better judges of character than humans are. If you've got, you know, your 17-year-old daughter brings her new boyfriend over, and your dog, who's usually great with people, can't stand the guy, don't let her go out with him. Trust your dog. And we're going to pick up on the rest of that after these messages. When we'll pick up from Shelter Dog to Service Dog, we'll be right back. You stay tuned. And welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. We are here finishing a very spirited discussion, talking about how some people can ruin a dog and some people can fix a dog, and how to be consistent and how to kind of diffuse the excitement that a lot of people seem to create in their dogs. Remember, the goal for the dogs has to be to get them to be calm and confident, kind of in control, and looking at you as though you're the parent, not the little brother, not the babysitter, but you have to be the parent. And those of you who have kids who haven't wound up in jail or in lots of trouble, you know what I'm talking about. Those of you who have done a great job and, you know, your kids turn out not the greatest anyway, well, sometimes it is, you know, there's more than genetics, and sometimes the genetics kind of skips a generation, but it's important nonetheless to make sure you are consistent. If you have a puppy who's particularly difficult, don't give the puppy up unless you don't have the wherewithal at all for the dog, but learn a different way. You know, if you're doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, that's a definition of insanity. So if you're going to your, you know, local obedience trainer and the dog is still ill-behaved and aggressive and all over the place and peeing and pooping all over your house and it's a mess, maybe you need to start looking at things a different way. And one of the things you can do is get a copy of my book, Shh Happens, Dog Behavior 101, and start looking into it. You can get it on Amazon. It's very important, though, that you start being consistent yourself. You can't expect for anything in life to be good or consistent if you're not being consistent. So let's start that out. And I was talking right before the break about people who can literally ruin a dog, or a dog does the same behaviors with those people or that person. And even when the dog goes back or to somebody else, the dog goes back to normal. So sometimes what happens, and I see a lot of this happening now, and even not with our service dogs, but I'm getting a lot of phone calls and emails for people whose service dogs are starting to exhibit behavioral issues, growling at people and lunging at people. And I'm talking about people who, you know, have, we're not talking about the people faking it. We're talking about people who have legitimate, legitimate need for a dog, most of them. A lot of them are PTSD. And because the people are getting more stressed, and maybe it wasn't the right dog to train, but the dog was trained to sit and lie down and, you know, just kind of the basic, you know, obedience things. And now the dogs and the people are shut in. So a working dog needs to keep working. And I've been going through with all of our people at Merlin's Kids. We've got 1,300 plus people through almost 30 years of training service dogs. And honestly, it's a kind of heartbreaking when you see what's happening. Our people are fine, but I see other families and other people who've bought dogs from different places. There was one out in California, there's another one in Virginia, and these dogs really were never trained right. Now they're starting to see these massive behavioral issues, because before, the dogs were burning off energy. At least they were in a vest, or they were outside, they were doing something. And now, just like the humans, the dogs are stuck in a house. So we've got to start working even with your service dogs. Let's go through some really good basic training that you can work on with your dog, whether it's a service dog or it's not. The behavioral training that I do, NCBR, Natural Canine Behavioral Rehabilitation, NCBR works on any dog because it's teaching the dog, not training the dog. So your dog actually ends up learning how to behave, not tricks. So you don't have to tell, like a Merlin's Kids dog, you don't have to tell the dog what to do. The dog figures it out from the situation. They think in the larger, grand scheme of things. They don't think, oh, you told me to sit, therefore I'll sit. The dog knows that when we stop and stand for a moment, the dog sits because we're stopped. And then if we sit down, or if we, you know, are standing for too long, and it's obviously not a mobility dog, the dog will lie down on its own. And people say, wow, it's like crazy. You don't tell your dogs what to do. What commands do you use? I don't. If I have a 12-year-old daughter, do I need to tell my 12-year-old daughter to follow me? Do I have to tell my 12-year-old daughter to close the door on the car? Do I have to tell my 12-year-old daughter to, you know, to use a fork? No, because it becomes a behavior. So you sit down to eat, you push your chair in, you learn however you were taught, you use your fork and your knife, you pick up your dish when you're done, you put it in the sink or in the dishwasher, you go to your room. You know, if you have to tell your 12-year-old what to do every step of the way, unless obviously it's a special needs individual, then you did something wrong, because they should know by the time they're 4 or 5 years old the patterns of behavior that are appropriate and acceptable and permissible in your home. Same thing with the dogs. So one of the greatest skills to practice if you have a, whether it's a regular pet or it's a service dog, or it's a dog you're trying to train to be a service dog, or it's a therapy dog or whatever, is do the same skill inside. And we have something called a safe spot mat, and that's what we call it. It's our special method, but I'm going to let you guys in on some secrets, and I think it's important. So if you're having a hard time getting your dog to sit or lie down, and you're sit with cookies and lie down and shock collar or whatever, you, I don't know, whatever people do these days, crazy things. Your dog is waiting for a command. Your dog is waiting for you to give it an ultimatum, a clue, a command. How about if you teach it to be automatic? How about if you put the dog on a leash and take the dog with you through the house and put down a towel or put down a little bed or a little mat? And when the dog finally just gets tired and decides, well, I don't know what this person wants of me, I'm just going to sit here. And the dog sits and all of a sudden reach down and pet his head. Tell him he's a good boy, a good girl, good job, good. And then just go back to what you're doing and do it again and do it again. Do it about 5 or 10 times in a row. And don't forget to pet. The most important thing with the NCBR and the behavior training that we use at Merlin's Kids is don't talk. Duct tape works really well. So don't tell your dog sit. Don't tell your dog lie down for this. Put your dog on a leash and walk around your house as if you are walking outside. Wait until your dog sits or lies down, wherever it is, whether it's on the mat or off the mat. When the dog sits, don't say a word. Just reach down and pet. Reach down and pet. Then do it a few times. Walk into another room. Do the same thing. Wait until the dog sits or lies down. Reach down and pet. Reach down and pet. Tell your dog in not in words, but in obvious movements. And I always say dog behavior is physical, and that does not mean that we're hitting something. Physical doesn't mean abusive. Physical means they're watching what we do. They're not waiting for us to tell them sit, lie down, beg, roll over. Don't. I mean, if you want to do tricks, you can certainly do tricks. But if you're trying to train your dog to be a service dog or a therapy dog or an emotional support dog, which, you know, hopefully people will start putting some training into the emotional support dogs, what you're going to do is start actually having a dog who is going to be perceptive. Let the dog watch you. For instance, if you get upset and the dog comes over to you naturally, pet the dog when he comes over. If you have a child and you're trying to train a dog to be an autism service dog or a special needs for a service dog, and you're trying to train that, if the dog comes over to your child and your child slaps them in the face or screams and pushes them away, what are you teaching the dog? You're teaching him to avoid the child. So that's where you have to help the dog out in understanding what you want. So if the dog comes over and lays down next to the child, even if the child isn't petting because he doesn't understand or he's having a tantrum, which is very normal with a lot of special needs kids, it's okay. It's, you know, it is what it is. You can reach down and pet the dog. Make sure that the dog understands that, wow, you know, this is a good thing. This is what you want me to do. And eventually the dog is going to learn that when you stop, he sits, he gets petted. Or when you're standing for a while, he lies down, he gets petted. You don't need food. I mean, that I call it the honey boo boo school of obedience. You get these fat, spoiled, rotten, you know, bratty dogs and kids. And instead of doing that, why not just teach your dog, teach him what to do? So we all know, you know, you can train a dog to sit and lie down. But again, when you're training, that insinuates and implies that you're giving a command and that the dog is responding to a particular command. Instead, what I want you to think of is teaching the dog manners, teaching the dog behavioral clues. If somebody comes into your house and you say, oh, turn your back on the dog, and the dog jumps and the person turns his back, don't you think the dog is looking and saying, oh, these humans aren't as dumb as I thought. Look, their signal to turn around is I just do this with my body. I pretend I'm jumping and they turn around. That's what dogs are thinking. They're thinking we're trainable. Some of us are trainable. Instead of that, and yelling off, 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 no, no, Fluffy, no, and you're screaming at the top of your lungs and yelling off and no and down, that's my favorite, no, down. Like, wait a minute, do you want me to lie down? What is down? Is down off or is off down? Because I've heard people do that, and I laugh. I go, what do you want your dog to do? Well, I don't want him to jump on my friend. See, every time they come in, my dog jumps, and I tell him, get off, get down. And I said, well, wait, do you want him to get off or do you want him to get lay down? Well, I want him to, I don't know. I want him not to jump. I said, why don't we just teach your dog not to jump? Why don't we teach him to respect the space and the boundary and the basically this airspace around personal space, right? We're all at 6 foot personal space now. Why don't we teach your dog not to jump instead of yelling at him and telling him off, down, no, sit, come, spot, whatever you guys do. Let's make it nice and consistent. So let's say your dog, let's say it's a service dog in training, okay? It doesn't mean it's perfect yet. It's in training. And if it's not a professionally trained, and even 90% of the professionally trained ones are really not very good at all. And I will also see a lot of people nodding their heads now and saying, yeah, I know. It, just because somebody claims to be a professional dog trainer doesn't mean they know how to train service dogs. A service dog is a completely different thing. So, you know, it's tricky. And I train cancer and disease detection dogs. I've trained narcotics dogs, bomb-sniffing dogs. I've trained body dogs, cadaver dogs, narcotics dogs for airports, like little beagles we use instead of using large, scary dogs. And beagles can get the scent that's dropping down from the body. So, you know, I've done it all. And what I see that is the most frustrating is people saying they know how to do something that they don't, and then owners being very sad or discouraged because they say, but my dog bit the trainer. Well, the trainer was an idiot. The trainer shouldn't have been working with an aggressive dog if he or she doesn't have extensive experience. I mean, listen, if you're practicing something, you're learning how to do it. You don't charge people, right? I've told people to do that, even United Canine Professionals, when, you know, I train people for Merlin's kids and United Canine Professionals, and we train people how to become behaviorists, how to train service dogs. We actually have classes in how to train service dogs, and we have classes in how to foster, and we have classes in how to become a canine behaviorist. It takes a lot of time. And the most frustrating thing is when people are trying to make a dog sit or make the dog lie down or go somewhere else because they don't want the dog to do another behavior. That's kind of like saying, I'm going to make your tires flat because I don't want you to go to the store and take a chance of getting coronavirus. So I'm going to make your tires flat so you can't, right? Why would you flatten the tires when all you would have to do is explain the concept, the overarching concept that, hey, it's dangerous to go to the store, don't go to the store. See what I'm saying? So don't do something else when that's not really what you were looking for. And it's very confusing to the dog because it's confusing to you. And if it's confusing for you and you don't have a sense of clarity, which is my word I always use about clarity, your dog needs clarity. If it doesn't make sense to you, it's not clear to you, how do you expect it to be clear to your dog? So let's talk about something else that's also very common now, which is people are getting very stressed. Put your dog on a leash, walk your dog around your apartment. Yeah, you heard me right. Walk your dog around your apartment. Walk around. I don't care if you have a 400 square foot apartment in New York City. Put your dog on a leash, walk him around your apartment. If you have long hallway, walk him up and down the hallway when nobody else is there, right? Or walk them, you know, in and out of the bathroom or in and out of the kitchen or in and out of a bedroom and take a little mat with you. Start working on safe spots. Start working on different things that are going to make sense to the dog. Throw a service vest on them. Start teaching them that when that vest is on, you've got to perform. You've got to be calm. You've got to be confident. You can't be acting out. You can't be jumping on people. You can't be barking at people. You can't have separation anxiety. You'll see that once you start giving your dog definite, clear signals, not commands, signals, your dog will start looking at you. My personal favorite and the thing I laugh at all the time is people go, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. And they're like, I look at people and I go, I wouldn't want to look at you. You don't have makeup on. Your hair's all a mess. You're growly. You got a grumbly face. You got Botox wrinkles on your between your eyes from scowling so much. I don't want to look at you. Maybe your dog doesn't want to look at you. It's the same thing as when you look at a special needs child and some of the therapists that work with them, some of them are amazing, but some of them, they're worried about is look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me, eye contact, eye contact. Well, you know, I don't always look at people when I'm paying attention to them. I can certainly listen to a lecture and write notes and hear, and I'm certainly attending, I'm paying attention, the word is attending, but I'm not, you know, looking at the person. So the dog to be looking at you isn't necessarily what you want. You want the dog attending to you, paying attention to you. Like a child, your child is doing math homework and is on a difficult problem, and you say, look at me when you answer me. And the kid's like, Mom, I'm in the middle of a problem. Well, you're talking to the kid. The kid's still not looking at you because he needs to work on that problem for math class. But you have to see him, and he has to look at you. So he looks up, loses his place, and has to redo the whole problem now. So same thing with your dogs. Try as much as you possibly can. Try to not focus on the dog having to do things. More look at it as the opportunities that the dog has. So the dog has the opportunity or the option to do this. So if your dog wants to get up on the furniture, that's the furniture rule that you can see in my book. And if anybody needs help, needs a big canine behaviorist, or would like to take our classes at United Canine Professionals, Merlin's Kids, you can definitely reach out to us. All the classes are given through Merlin's Kids, and the certifications for the canine behavior come through United Canine Professionals, but Merlin's Kids people, which is myself and a bunch of other people, we're the ones who actually train you to do this. We also have like the therapy dog classes. We have service dog classes. And what to me is the most fun is watching people who used to yell at their dogs or talk about things with their dogs and have long, lengthy discussions about, well, why are you barking at the window? I wish you would stop barking at the window. It's only Fluffy. It's only the mailman. It's the same mailman we've had since we moved into the house. I don't understand. You know, Fluffy, stop. Fluffy, no, stop barking at the mailman. And I sit there and I laugh and I'm like, why are you having a whole conversation? All you're doing is being the backup singers. You're the doo-wop chorus for your dog. Go up to the window, look out the window, say hi to the mailman, walk into your kitchen or into another room, and you'll see the dog. Don't look at the dog, but you'll see and you'll hear toenails behind you. The dog's going to follow you and you're going to go, I can't believe that worked. Because you wouldn't yell at your doorbell. Don't yell at your dog. You know, it's crazy how quickly time flies, and we're going to have to stop our tete-a-tete today. But if you've learned nothing else, and if you remember nothing else, just remember that dogs are a product of their environment. Your energy affects the dog's behavior. The dog's energy can affect your behavior. If a dog is doing something at your house that it doesn't do at other people's houses, then it's probably not the dog. It's probably your house. Start working on yourself. Stop blaming the dog. Stop blaming each other. If something happens, the first thing and the first and the best way to do it is assume it's your fault and be proven otherwise. I hope all of you guys stay safe, stay inside, observe all the quarantine. Please enjoy your dogs. Enjoy your family. This is going to be over before we know it. And we're going to look back at it and think how lucky we were to spend some time with our families, even though right now you don't think that. God bless everybody. Please stay healthy and safe. And we'll talk to you next week. Take care.